If you're interested in these kind of topics, you're in the right place. Connection Therapy Podcast talks about these and more topics all the time. And on occasion, we have special courses to take the learning further. And I'd like to let you know about one of those coming up in May. Dr. Janet Jones will present 6 neurological reasons for horses' excellence as therapy animals. If you're familiar with the work of Dr. Janet Jones, you're likely aware she has expertise in human brains and horse brains, and she combines her skills to talk about the neuroscience of horsemanship. And it has a lot of contributions to mental health therapy, which is why I'm thrilled she will be presenting this for us in May. Link in the show notes if you'd like to learn more about this event. We'd love to see you there.
This lesson teaches people that every species, and to a lesser extent, every individual, has their own ways of wanting to connect or attach or develop trust, and that you have to know what that other person's ways are.
Hello, and thank you for joining the Connection Therapy Podcast. This is a podcast about the craft of psychotherapy, and we seek to support those who strive to improve their craft by sharing research about the science and stories about the art of psychology. Together, we will explore these findings so you can decide how you want to apply them to benefit your practice. Welcome back to my conversation with Dr. Janet Jones. Dr. Janet Jones applies brain science to the training of horses and riders. She earned her PhD from UCLA and taught the neuroscience of perception, language, memory, and thought for 23 years. Janet travels all over the world explaining brain-based horsemanship to riders, trainers, veterinarians, farriers, breeders, and equine physiotherapists. She co-teaches large animal behavior at Colorado State University Veterinary School and consults on equine topics with companies such as Disney World and Nissan Motor Corporation. She has authored multiple books, including 2 books that are how I ran onto her work. The first is called Horse Brain, Human Brain, The Neuroscience of Horsemanship. And the upcoming one later this year is entitled A Horse's World, A Neuroscientist's Journey into the Equine Mind. So you can see there are many ways that I overlap with Dr. Jones's interests, and I'm thrilled to invite her to the podcast today.
Yes, we humans do tend to take things personally and assume that, you know, animals are trying to manipulate us or resist us, all kinds of things that might not actually be the case. I think an awful lot of time the animals just don't understand exactly what we want or what we expect.
Right. Yeah. And that's actually something I wanted to ask you about as well, is if there are miscommunications, which clearly there can be many, I'm curious how, for horses and for humans, you know, we can see some of these fear or confusion, perhaps, or anxiety, or even excitement in some ways in their body language. And I was wondering if you would highlight a few examples of how this works for horses. And then, as we've talked about, I'm especially curious about eye movements, but of course I would be because I'm a human. So perhaps you could let us know about body language overall. And then, since so much of that works in humans from eyes to eyes, maybe we can add that in after you describe horses overall.
Okay, that sounds good. Fear is, well, first of all, I should back up just a little bit. Horses have prey brains. The prey brain is driven primarily by fear in all prey animals. And so we need to recognize that fear is the predominant emotion in a horse. And people who don't work very often with young or green horses or difficult horses are often not aware of just how fearful they are when they're very, very young. By the time you get a horse that's 4 years old or 5 years old, he has gone through, hopefully, quite a lot of training to reassure him that those fears are not going to mean the difference between life and death. But when that horse is 1 or 2 or 3 years old, he clearly believes that any fear, any item that he has to shy away from could kill him. He believes that. And fear is very obvious in horses if you know how to read their body language, which is something that I think all people who work with horses should learn. The earliest signs of fear are muscle tension in the neck. Sometimes this cannot be seen in the very early stages. It can only be felt, which is another reason why using your hands on your horse's body is such an important thing to do. Another very early sign is the raising of the head for fear. And people often assume that that means they will see a horse raise his head by a foot when he's scared.
Right.
But equine body language is much more subtle than that. So a horse will first show fear by raising his head an inch. And you need to be able to see that inch. You need to notice that difference. Because if you don't do anything to allay the horse's fear, then the head will continue to climb upward and the fear in the horse's mind will continue to grow worse and worse. One of the biggest training problems we have with horses is that people do not address equine emotions early enough. So it's pretty easy to calm a horse whose head has raised an inch. But if you wait, and if you continue the behavior that induces that kind of fear, you will then have to try to calm a fire-breathing dragon, which is much, much harder to do. So one of the things that we can do to help horses the most is to learn their body language and notice these problems as quickly, or I should say as early, as we possibly can, and then do something about it right then. A lot of times I hear people say, well, I noticed that, but I thought that I would wait just for a minute to see if he just calmed down on his own. Well, chances are he won't calm down on his own. And there's really no need for him to do that. It's okay for him to have you as a guide, a helper, someone who's on his side and is willing to say in an equine way, hey, that's okay. You don't really have to worry about that. We're okay. So I think those are the two biggest early signs to look for, the raising of the head and the muscle tension in the neck.
And for humans, it's often the eyes, right? It's like the upper parts of our eyes, because we don't have as usually, I think we do have muscle tension, but especially if we're wearing our hair or have collars on or something, it's a little harder to see unless the muscle tension in the face perhaps. And so thinking about how we can learn from horses, particularly like you were saying, once we notice these things and it is important for us to respond to them, or just in general, what do you think it takes for humans to, or what has been your experience of the humans you're kind of doing this training with? What does it take for them to be able to see these signs in horses, and what can we learn from horses overall? In other words, what does the human have to do to take in this information?
I think the first thing we have to do is learn the basics of equine body language. And by the basics, I mean things like fairly visible movements in eyes, ears, tail, feet, all of that kind of thing. And at first, it's so hard for people to think of this at a really precise level that I think it's just helpful for them to get the idea of, you know, let's say take four different ear positions and learn what those mean. And there are, you know, countless numbers of possible ear positions in horses. But if we just start with the most basic three or four and learn those, and then watch for those and do the same with feet, eye movements, etc. Tail movements are very important, and many people never even think to look at the horse's tail. And then I think after you have some basic understanding of what to look for, then I recommend to my own riding students and clients to go out to a pasture where there's a group of horses, sit down and plan to stay there for several hours, and just watch. Just sit there silently and watch the horses. And what usually happens, it's kind of interesting. People usually tell me when they go out and do that, they'll watch for about 10 minutes. And then they'll come back and they'll say, well, you know, right now they're not doing anything. Mm-hmm. And I'll say, oh, but they are. You mm-hmm. just don't understand how carefully you have to look to mm-hmm. see this stuff. You need to bring, you know, make your vision much finer, use that wonderful human acuity and really look for the details. And so then we'll sit together for a little while and I'll say, you know, did you see how that horse right there moved his left front foot over by an inch to alter his position with respect to that other horse? Mm-hmm. And people will say, oh, well, I did see that, but I didn't know that that's what I was supposed to be looking for. So mm-hmm. a little bit of, you know, instruction or help goes a long way. And once people realize the level of detail that is necessary, then they really begin to sit and watch. And that's where you can really start learning to just watch the way horses communicate with each other before you even try to understand how they are attempting to communicate with us.
Yeah, beautiful. Thank you. Yeah, I'm imagining the scene as you talk. And I have sometimes considered that because they are prey animals and we're predator animals, that we sort of have the luxury of doing what we're doing right now, which is just talking and not worrying about if anyone, you know, might overhear us, and because we're not in a pasture where we have to watch for things happening. Yeah. And as a result, it's like with every little sign they do, like you say, a step just an inch one way or the other, it's almost like with their body language, they're kind of like that, they're screaming in a way. Like every little sign that they do non-verbally feels like it's like tenfold in terms of, you know, if it gets bigger to the point that we can see it and start watching it, then it's quite distinct for them because they don't have the same experience of walking the world and like we do, where they just have the luxury of just hopping along and talking to their buddy. They have to be quiet and they have to kind of make these conversations happen in really subtle ways, such that once it raises to the level of our human awareness, they're really having loud conversations as despite there's nothing we can hear.
Yes. There's constant communication among horses, and there's constant communication when we are with our horses. A lot of people tell me, I wish my horse could talk. Mm-hmm. And I always remind them, your horse is talking to you all the time. He's yes. not using his mouth. He's mm-hmm. using his body, but he is talking to you all the time and you haven't been listening.
Yes.
And he will continue trying until the time comes that he eventually will give up and figure these humans don't understand anything that I'm trying to communicate. So there's really no sense in continuing to attempt to communicate with them, which I think is a very sad state of affairs to yes. get to. But as soon as people begin to understand and respond to the kind of communications that horses give us, the horses will communicate even more. There's one thing I kind of wanted to go back to a little bit.
Sure.
You mentioned eye movements.
Yeah.
So there are some really interesting things about eye movements with horses. And I have a good example, real life example that's
okay.
Fun. To an equine prey brain, direct eye contact is a warning. That's a major warning.
Mm-hmm.
That's like you have done something wrong and bad things could happen. Okay.
Okay.
So it's really important for us not to look directly at our horse's eyes unless we are trying to deliver a warning.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I think people have a very hard time with, especially people in cultures like in the United States, for example, where direct eye contact is considered to be a positive thing, that we do it with each other. We view it as something that can be reassuring. We think of it as showing our attention to another person or another animal. And so I often have to remind my students, don't look straight at his eyes. And it's a really common thing that people want to do. So to keep a horse calm, or to encourage a horse to follow you, or to come toward you, or to come into a location where he's a little hesitant, it's always best to either turn your back to him and look straight ahead and let him follow, or to look at his shoulder or his feet or at the ground. But direct eye contact basically says no. And often people do not realize that. They think it means yes, come forward, do what I'm asking you to do. So a few years ago, I had a friend who didn't know much about horses, but came with me one day to the barn, and I was in the process of loading a difficult horse into a trailer. And this was a very, very good person, good guy, very nice, very, you know, unthreatening, unassuming sort of a person. And so I was trying to load this horse and having a lot of trouble. And I was so focused on the horse that I didn't really think to look at the man who was there also, who didn't know anything about horses. And I noticed that he was standing near the back of the trailer, looking at the horse, watching the whole event take place. And so I asked him, I said, you know, would you mind just, you know, move over here to a different location and don't look at the horse's face as it's approaching the trailer. So this guy did that. And of course, the horse walked right on to the trailer at that point. And the most interesting thing of the whole story was the way that this gentleman explained to me what he was trying to do. And he laughed and he said, I am so sorry. I was actively looking deeply into that horse's eyes in an effort to soothe him and reassure him and show him that the trailer was okay.
Yeah.
And I think we've all had experiences like that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we're beckoning the horse to come forward with our eyes without realizing that our eyes are pushing the horse away.
Oh, yeah. The 8-year-old in me still does that on occasion. Just when I walk up to greet my horses in the morning, it's like, oh, yeah, I really want to say good morning and look them in the eye and say, you know, how you doing this morning or whatever. And that's not what they are looking to do, you know. And,
no. And they'll be delighted if you'll walk right up and stroke their shoulder, stroke their neck, talk to them, you know. All the rest of it is just fine. But direct eye contact really does have a strong effect.
It does. And I will say too, to reinforce your point, thank you for taking us back there, because it's a really important thing for people who are doing, and we'll get to this in a little bit, I think, but just to kind of make the mark here that we'll come back to it or highlight it now. Anyone doing equine assisted services really needs to, I think, emphasize this, as well as how much social media has sort of these beautiful images of these connections with other species. And, you know, I think a lot of times when I've been doing this work recently, I have realized how much social media pictorializes the relationship between humans and horses, and that we're looking for that sort of moment that is meaningful from our human perspective. And it's, to your point, it's not the one that's going to be, it's not received in the same way from the horses. And when we're working therapeutically, you know, that can be a real letdown, because sometimes people are working with horses in that way because it's been kind of tough with humans to get connection as well. And so it can feel like a reinforcement of that lack of connection. And I think this is what's really important when we're working cross species, is to highlight that, you know, for horses, this actually is not the same thing at all. And as a result, when they show you they're connected to you in other ways, that's how you can know that you're partnering up with them, versus this sort of, for me, it's been a really important way to have good conversations about how there are just differences. And so we can want something, and it doesn't mean that the person or the horse that we want it from is actually rejecting that petition for our partnership, but they're just in different ways. So
absolutely. I really agree with that. And I think that another thing that can happen, a very effective thing that can happen with equine-assisted therapy, is that this lesson teaches people that every species, and to a lesser extent, every individual, has their own ways of wanting to connect or attach or develop trust. Mm-hmm. And that you have to know what that other person's ways are, instead of just assuming that you know what they are. Because yeah. I think that in human-to-human interactions, we often have trouble where one person assumes that this other one wants to be treated in a particular way, and they've just inadvertently stumbled on the wrong method, you know? And sometimes it's really helpful to ask, How do you prefer to go about this? Or what is it that helps you feel more comfortable around people? And those are the kinds of things that I think, in effect, I'm trying to do with horses. But instead of asking them, I'm just having to kind of look at their brains and extrapolate from that. Here's how a prey brain is going to react to something. Right. So sometimes it really helps to teach people, find another person's best way of building trust and try to use it to your advantage.
Yeah, that's lovely. Yeah, thank you. This conversation is broken into three parts. This is the second part, where she is really explaining how we can recognize emotional states across species. And then in the upcoming episode, we're going to talk about what humans can learn from horses to improve our relationships, both with horses and with other humans. And she gives some fun examples of how that could work. And if you're like me, you're already thinking about how to incorporate this into your awareness of the world, and particularly how to apply it to mental health. For example, she mentioned one of my favorite quotes she said was, "Let's imagine just four ear positions for horses." I've had horses quite a while, and I still am intimidated by just starting with the first four different ear positions. And I have been considering, since she said that to me, what the counterpart is in humans. And I think it might be the micro expressions across our face, particularly eyes and mouth or lip movements. But I'm curious your thoughts, as always. If you'd like to drop a line in letting me know your thoughts on this, that would be most welcome. And there are ways to do that in the show notes. Thanks. I hope you'll join us again for future explorations in the field of psychology. And if you'd like to take a step further, there are additional ways to obtain more education and support on our website, connectiontherapypodcast.com. While there, you will find information about the authors and studies featured in the podcast episodes. Also, you will see a schedule of live trainings I offer on the topics featured in the podcast. And you will find information about the Connection Community, a growing group of mental health clinicians dedicated to the study and practice of psychotherapy. Please check out our website, connectiontherapypodcast.com, to learn more. Thanks. Until next time.